From the broad sweeping questions, we are going to the questions that we can actually solve. Give the floor to Nicolette.
Thank you very much, Hans. Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Agenda paper 12 discusses a matter relating to illustrative example 13, accompanying IFRS 16. We were informed of the potential confusion regarding the treatment of lease incentives that arises because of how lease incentives were illustrated in the example. The paper discusses whether any change should be made to illustrative example 13 to resolve the potential for confusion. Our analysis is in paragraphs 9 to 18 of the paper. Based on our analysis, we recommend that the board propose amending illustrative example 13 as part of the next annual improvement process. Appendix A outlines our recommended amendment to illustrative example 13. A final point to note is that the US GAAP standard on leases does not include a similar illustration, so this is an IFRS-only matter. I now ask the board for their thoughts on the proposed amendment.
Thank you. Well, I think it's a positive recommendation of yours that we amend this example if it has proven to eventually lead to erroneous conclusions. But to get there, I would prefer to follow the second route, the one that you identified in 20B. For 20A, basically, you would be silent on the issue that may have led to difficulties. And I think it's preferable to include the issue that raised difficulties, but by being extremely clear about it. And in fact, in bringing that clarity, I would propose some changes to the wording that you have in 20B. I would refer to the leasehold improvements in BEI that constitute an enhancement of the lessor's assets. And in BII, instead of saying it's not associated with the lease, nor does it represent the reimbursement or assumption, which is not really informative in from my perspective, I would say does not benefit the lessee and is therefore separate from the lease.
Sue?
I support the proposal to address this issue that's been raised because it seems genuinely to have created some confusion amongst people who, you know a lot about IFRS standards. So if they think there's a source for confusion, I think we need to take that seriously. And if we were earlier in the process, I'd probably be more inclined to actually change the example in a way that provided more information rather than just deleting. But I guess at this stage, I'm keen to try and find a path that is as helpful and causes the least risk of disruption as possible, given that we're so close to the effective date of 16. So I agree with the recommendation to just do the strike through, because the example's not really about what's a lease improvement or not anyway, so it's maybe just a distraction. And I'd rather not put in something which to us seems sensible but might actually be contrary to what somebody's done in good faith and application and may be disruptive. So I prefer a deletion. I guess one slightly odd thing about this and putting it out for comment is the fact that it's not in the sort of mandatory part of the standard. It's in the illustrative examples which accompany but are not the standard. So I think if I was being very, very, very technical, there's a question of whether or not we even have to expose for comment something which is in an illustrative example. But given where we are at the process, and because there's always a risk that we might be doing something which we think is innocuous that actually isn't innocuous, I think for purposes of safety, even if we don't technically speaking have to do it, I think it's still a good safety valve, if you like, to put it out so people have got an opportunity to provide comment on it. But maybe we should make the point that we don't necessarily have to do that. so we don't set a precedent.
Thank you. I'm following Francois's suggestion. If we don't have any big problems, you'd like to have the second option. And in your paper, paragraph 21A, you said the second option has the potential to raise new questions, even though this is not essential. So do you think these new questions are so challenging to deal with?
I think it depends on the specific facts and circumstances, obviously, that occur in practice. I think it will result in a determination in, if we look at specifically at leasehold improvements, are the leasehold improvements an asset of the lessor or the lessee? So I think that is then the question that will be raised if we add the additional information. How easy that is to determine, I think, will be very much based on facts and circumstances.
So I support the staff recommendation to make the change, and I support the change you are recommending. To climb on a soapbox for a moment, ordinarily I would not have supported changing a illustrative example, because I think the examples are simply non-mandatory aside from everything else, and the standard should have been able or should be able to stand on its own. And if people are doing the wrong thing because of the example, then changing an example shouldn't make a difference. It's still non-mandatory. But given that we're in the very early stage, or given we're in the implementation phase, the standard hasn't been published yet, I think anything we can do that removes an element of confusion helps as far as that's concerned. So I support it for that reason. But for exactly that reason, I also don't support trying to change the standard at all. I assume most people out there who are applying the standard are applying it based on the words, and they look just to the examples to kind of help them along with that. I think anything we add in that space at the moment is more likely to be negative than positive at this stage. And again, agree with Sue that if this was earlier, we could have perhaps thought about providing additional guidance. As I say, if this was later in the process, I probably wouldn't have recommended changing it at all. But I think where we are now, it does help with the confusion.
Gary?
Thank you. Actually, I disagree with the recommendation, and I don't think we should do anything. Is I don't think it's that important of an issue. LHI in the realm of big leases is not the biggest number in the world. Plus, it's in non-authoritative example in it. And so I personally don't think it makes the test of cost-benefit or profound issues that needs correction. If we're going to correct something, I think 20B.2 is much clearer in terms of giving guidance. But I disagree with that conclusion also, because actually I think the LHI reimbursement is associated with the lease. We may argue it doesn't quite meet some of the words we've got, but the reality is the lessor and the lessee are sitting at the table, and the lessee, there's a certain max amount of money the lessee wants to pay, and there's a certain minimum amount of money the lessor is willing to take, and if they overlap, they have a deal. And all these other things are just packaging. I mean, what would happen if the lessor said, for example, give me your plans, I'll build it out and just include in the rent? I mean, that's entirely plausible. In fact, not uncommon. You'd get different answers depending on who actually, the flow of the transaction event. So for multiple reasons, I disagree both in importance also in terms of, the actual technical reason.
Doc?
Thank you. I disagree, like Gary said. I don't think this wording is utterly confusing. It's already said in the last sentence, this is because costs incurred on leasehold improvement by leases are not included within the cost of the right of use of asset. Of course, it does not directly say it's not the lease incentive, but as in the paragraph 13 in your paper said, it implies that it has nothing, not with the leases. So you can easily guess that it is not a part of the lease. And in the lease improvement, there will always be some restoration duty. So therefore, those who read this wouldn't confuse so seriously. That is the first reason. And the second reason is I don't think it's a good idea to change it now. If we change it now, it will give the wrong message that you know, all the leasehold should be treated as a kind of a lease incentive. So we have to be careful about overreaction. As long as ISB do something, ISB is thinking the other way around. So it would cause unintended consequences. And the third point is I don't think it's a good idea to change the part of the standard, even if it's an illustrative example, before the effective date. Changing it effective date would confuse the preparers. And also, it may give another message that some people who are not happy with other part of the standard would raise the issue. And then we changed this one, which I think is a very small one. But if we found a little more significant one, and as Darrell pointed out, to the closer to the effective date, what shall we do? So that would cause lots of problematic situation. So I disagree with staff's proposal.
François, and let's then vote.
Well, I realize that I didn't explain my position, if there were the arguments in favor of my position. I agree with Gary that any payment by the lessor that reduces the cost of the lease to the lessee should be taken into account. But I think that the example as it stands today is really misleading because it first characterized the amount as being an incentive, and then it provides a reasoning that does not link the money that is received to the lessor's benefits. So you really read this like if the lessor subsidizes me in providing the improvement within that are going to benefit that are going to benefit the lessee, then it would not be an incentive. So it provides the idea that you have different types of payments, some which are incentives, different types of incentives because it's qualified, some that you would treat as incentive and some that you don't. So I think when you have something that can really trigger misaccounting, we should absolutely correct it. The fact that it's authoritative, non-authoritative, I don't think should play a role because, I don't want to open that area of discussion because it's a long subject. The other reason why I suggested, so to me it's important that it is corrected, otherwise it leads to impossible question to resolve. And the other reason why I support B and not A is because B does not, with A it looks like we have had a problem and we've put it under the carpet. We have only this paper. I have had the need of discussing with the staff to identify the from which the lessor expects benefits. It was because you start with reading the example before you get to identifying this little thing. It's very difficult. So I think it really looks that if people have encountered this difficulty, they will be lost instead of being helped. And the fact that we're close to the implementation date, all our implementation efforts are have as an objective of having consistent accounting. Why, just because we are close to the implementation date, would we not want to have this effort towards consistency made? Waiting for an agenda decision of the IFRIC to come at a later date so that people can have a voluntary change of accounting policy. I think the thing which is least disruptive is to have people, as much as feasible, doing the right thing. And once this starts, I think they can, almost from today, start doing the right thing.
I had a couple of conversations with people about the example here and whether it was right, whether it was wrong, and why it was right or why it was wrong. And in those conversations, they led to about 20-minute explanations of all of the assumptions people were making at the back of their heads that would help them conclude whether or not this was correct, just badly articulated, whether there were enough facts, blah, 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 which... I think the problem we've run into with this example is we've tried to make a point in such a condensed way that it risks being misread. And for us to fix that, I think we need to then get into such a verbose explanation of why what was here was okay. It detracts from the whole point of the example. So I think that the example doesn't need to be complicated by this extra fact pattern. I think it's still a useful example, even if we delete this. We were probably too ambitious, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, with what we tried to ram into this example. And so I think it's better just to simplify it, just strike it through.
Mm-hmm. Tom, and then I'll again try to vote.
I agree with Francoise that as it stands, it's misleading and shouldn't be doing this. I just want to get clear. I sort of heard 2-point-something if I include Gary in favor of B and 2 or 3 people in favor of A. And I'm just wondering, if we go to vote, Mike, how do you vote if you were somebody who liked B? Should I vote down A?
Yeah.
Or it comes back to this. There's a little, like I don't know how to deal when people are suggesting the alternative. Like, do we do a straw poll whether that's viable?
Well, I think first we propose ask who votes for the staff recommendation, which is to make the change strike through.
Yeah. Who supports the staff recommendation?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Okay, problem solved.